Sacramento has a new tag team in the midday. It's Styles and Watkins on Sactown Sports.
Styles and Watkins, Sactown Sports on a football Friday, NFL Friday. And as promised, we are joined by former NFL tight end Asante Cleveland, Sacramento's finest, joining us for the next hour. Asante, thanks for joining us, man. How's it going?
I'm doing good. Thank you guys so much for having me on. It's a pleasure.
Thank you for coming on. Obviously, you know, you and I, we're in the same circle. Yeah. So, yeah, we go back a little bit. And, you know, I definitely knew with all the football stuff going on this weekend, Niners playing, I was like, we got to get Asante in here, get some insight on the games this weekend. And, yeah, man, thank you for coming on. Appreciate it, man. So, I mean, first and foremost, for people who aren't really familiar with you, you mentioned, yeah, we know each other from Christian Brothers. Just kind of fill people in on your background a bit, you know, where you went to high school, when you went to college, your NFL journey, and what you got going on since.
Yeah, I, Sacramento native, went to Christian Brothers High School, where I first got introduced to playing football. Didn't like it at first, but got pretty good. One of the most proudest achievements of my career is we won the Holy Bowl my senior year after a 9-year drought. From there, I had the opportunity to play at the University of Miami, where it was a legacy institution.
Especially for tight ends, man. Yeah, Jeremy Shockey, you know.
And around that same Greg time Olson. Where I was getting recruited, the U documentary came out. So I got to just see the glory of what Miami was in the 80s, 90s. And it was a no-brainer decision for me. I went there, had an up-and-down career, played a lot my freshman year, and then for my sophomore and junior year, I was riding the pine. And then my senior year, I figured it out, got on the field, was primarily a run-blocking tight end, had a couple opportunities in the pass game, but I did just enough to go undrafted to the 49ers my rookie year, then got traded to the Patriots my next year. Then finished my career out with 2 years at the Chargers. So I was there in the NFL for 4 years. Since transitioning out, I've written a book about my experience and what I've learned through life lessons from what I learned from sports and overcoming obstacles. I'm a speaker, and I've had an opportunity to be on Channel 3 talking sports and some Niners postgame show.
Yeah, I've definitely caught those. You and Michelle Dapper doing great things, breaking down all things 49ers. We got plenty of time to talk Niners as we're here with Asante Cleveland, former NFL tight end. I want to just take a second to talk about, before I get to, we got the recruiting process and not getting signed, obviously. Brock Purdy barely got drafted, right? But, I mean, you walk in here, I got to ask the question, was there you hear this all the time with Jimmy Graham, did you have a basketball or football situation, or did you not play basketball?
In high school?
Yeah, or in general, I guess.
No, I was a basketball player. I thought I was a basketball player.
Yeah.
Then my junior year reality kind of hit me to where I was getting no attention in basketball, and then I got my first football offer. Mm-hmm. And I hadn't really put that much effort and attention into football. And that's when it clicked where, all right, if I'm going to go to college for free, it's going to be through football. So I spent my senior year just studying all the top tight ends at my position. I think they had me ranked number 63 at tight end in the country. Mm-hmm. And after my senior year, my rating went up to 15. And that's
really?
When University of Miami offered me.
How does that whole process work? I mean, when you're in high school, I have no idea how much it's changed since then. But, like, I mean, the ranking system is pretty much everything, right? Like, how much of that is going to camps and just kind of getting your, you know, putting film out there, sending it out to coaches? Like, what is that process like just in terms of getting noticed?
I think I did it a little different than most of the kids when I was coming up, because there was a lot of emphasis on camps. But I didn't want to go to a bunch of camps because, especially now that I've been in college, camps are essentially money grabs for a lot of these college coaches. There's going to be 200 kids at this camp, and not one of them is going to get an offer. Maybe one or two may get some interest, but you go to these camps with these high hopes, and there's nothing really that comes from it. I figured that if I was good enough, then somehow they would find me. Mm. And I focused on putting out a good highlight tape. Since I had studied all of these number one tight ends in the countries and seeing, like, okay, what are they doing that is getting this all this attention and notoriety, and what can I do to try to replicate it?
Yeah, I mean, I think that makes a lot of sense. We got some sound here from Coach Prime about the NIL because times are changing
times
here,
are
right?
Very it's
well, and that's what we want to hear from you. But before we get to the sound on Prime, the other part of this that, you know, you have Nick Saban retiring, and it's not just the NIL, it's also the transfer portal. You said that you actually sat at the U. Do you think that, do you think about that, how things would have changed if the transfer portal was available at that time? And what do you think about the transfer portal in general?
It's not that the transfer portal wasn't available. It's just the rule was if you transferred, you had to sit out for a year.
Yeah, exactly.
And while that time when, like, my junior year, I had high hopes of, like, okay, I'm going to get back on the field. I played a little bit, but not enough to really make a difference. And at that point, I wanted to transfer. I had talked to my dad about, like, maybe looking to some other colleges, but decided to stick it out. I could not imagine how hard it is as a coach to maintain and build culture when it is so easy and so attractive for a player to just jump ship so quickly. On the flip side, there are a lot of people that are leaving these schools and not finding a suitable home, and they're putting themselves at more of a disadvantage. So I think that if you have a legit opportunity to go and play and your NIL earning potential goes up and you can go to a bigger program, then go for it. But if you're just frustrated and don't really have a plan, it's kind of more of an emotional response that I don't think is a good idea to just jump in.
There's no way 16, 17-year-olds are going to make emotional decisions, right?
No, of course not. Course not.
They got a great infrastructure of help.
Of course.
Well, and the allure of, and I know you said your recruiting was a little different, but everybody wants to be recruited. You get to relive that over and over and over again. These guys are taking official trips as they're already at these Power 5 big conferences. It's crazy.
And money's involved now, too.
Let's hear from Coach Prime. He's talking about these price tags. It's ridiculous.
I text him, man, you crazy. That's what I text him when I saw his tweet today. We got to win, man. We got to win. I mean, that's what he's on. But you're talking about probably our best recruiter is Shador and Trav. Kids want to play with them. They want to get down with them. That's why the whole offensive line has been changed. It's a lot of movement, but it's a price tag on everything nowadays. It ain't just a kid, man. They need to just jump in the portal with what they cost.
Hey, $100,000 here, $50,000 here.
$50,000 get your walk on these days.
That's from RG3's podcast with Coach Prime. And look, me and Kyle went back and forth as far as Coach Prime, if he was being a little tongue-in-cheek with the 50K. But this is crazy, man.
Yeah.
This is a new frontier.
Imagine having $50,000, apparently on the low end, having $50,000 in college.
Yeah.
Nice. I thought I was balling when I had $500 in my account.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the landscape has changed. There are legit millionaires.
Did you see Caleb Williams? The picture of his car, the picture of his penthouse.
Did you see his Richard Mille on the sideline?
It's crazy. And it just makes, you know, he did end up declaring Caleb, but there was a big question. Hey, does he really have to?
Does it make sense?
Well, I'm thinking back to Matt Leinart. I'll never forget that senior year of Matt Leinart. It was junior, senior year, and he was taking, a ballet class because he didn't need to take any more.
Right.
Imagine doing that, but also getting paid, right? Yeah. So I think the whole thing is interesting. I know for me, and I'm curious your thoughts on this because I played baseball in college, did not. I don't know what, maybe I would have got free pizza from the local pizza shop or something like that. But a lot of people have the conversation of, hey, you're getting free, they're getting free education, right? That should be the pay. That's enough. And to be honest with you, because baseball doesn't even get the amount of scholarships of NFL or college football players, I was kind of in that camp because I'm over here still trying to, I don't have enough meal money. And these big old football players are eating it up. They're having the time of their life. And it wasn't until I left school and I really put into perspective how much money these dudes are bringing into these schools that I thought, all right, this is a whole different level because it's one thing to say, okay, yeah, they're getting paid to go to school. And that is not incorrect. But if you look at I think Brian Gumbel said it years ago, what a great business model. You make billions and you don't get to pay you don't have to pay the employees anyway. And they're still technically not getting paid to play.
Yeah, they're not getting paid. And in a lot of cases, they're also not getting the education that they're promised because their whole schedule has to fit around what the team allows. Mm-hmm. I remember I was getting recruited by Cal, and at that time, all of the football players had to either be like a psychology major or a criminal justice major because those schedules best fit the football schedules. Wow. So a lot of these guys were getting funneled into these majors that might not serve them the best after college.
Yeah.
And also, and up until now, apparently, college athletes were the only people on campus that were not allowed to prepare for their future. Mm. Other students can go take internships in the summer. They can go meet with other businesses. They can go get a side job. Athletes, because of the NCAA rules, were not allowed to do anything of the such. They couldn't even get an agent to help put them in the right position for when they did make the transition to professional sports. So the whole amateurism facade was just that.
And now it's out in the open real quick because you mentioned Cal and that note about where you go or what you're going to do. Because a lot of these guys don't get drafted or don't get signed. Right. I did an internship at Cal when I was done. So this was about 2014, 2015. And they had a guy who was a coach, right? But really, he was a career coach. Hey, guys, I know you're going to the league, but just in case you do, here's a situation to put you in, and what else are you interested in? He told me, he said, Alan, this is in 2014, maybe they're more now. Alan, there are only two programs in the country that have something like this, Cal and Michigan. That's it. Wow. Everybody else, thank you for your service. We'll send you on your way.
Yeah, that's essentially what it was when I was in college. There was no real effort on the program to get people prepared for if you don't
go to is a majority of the kids,
99% do not.
Yeah.
So hopefully that has built up over time, that there's more programs getting these college athletes prepared for life after sport, because regardless of if you play in the professional ranks, mm-hmm. no matter how long, you are not going to be an athlete for the rest of your life.
Right.
So having the right information on what you can do post-sport, hopefully it's later down the road, but if it is right after college, that information is so vital because athletes spend so much of their lives dedicated and committed to this one thing, and it becomes so much of a part of their identity that when it's gone, there's a huge loss of self,
mm-hmm. Totally.
A long period of self-discovery that a lot of us go through, and having resources to help prepare us for that next step would be very helpful.
Yeah, I mean, when you saying that, I mean, I'm a big fan of the Netflix show Last Chance U, and that's really, I mean, the biggest takeaway I always take every single season is just like, man, these guys are in JUCO. They're still grinding, but every single one of these kids believes they're still going to the league. Mm-hmm. And, like, a lot of it is just like you're saying. It's a lot of discovery process of figuring out, who am I outside of what I do? And, you know, now that kids are getting paid, like we said, millions of dollars in NIL – forget after college. It seems like they need some almost, you know, how are these kids going to learn how to handle money? How to say, hey, look, while you are in that figuring out process, you're making a ton of money right now. Put some away. Here's how to invest. Here's some good options to you know, maybe you can invest back in the school. There's tons of different things you can do. Here's how to tell people no might be the number one thing those kids should learn. And it doesn't feel like even now that stuff exists while the kids are in school. It feels like a majority, if at all, is focused on the post-school career, which is, I don't know.
Yeah, I think they're making strides in the right direction. As of right now, this whole NIL deals, it's kind of the wild, wild west.
Right.
Hopefully, some more structure gets created around it. But overall, they're moving in the right direction. And I'm happy for all these kids. I just wish I was born
later. 10 years later, you would have been
I'm sure you're not alone, even myself. I mean, I would have taken the free pizza at the time. I would have taken anything. Talking to Asante Cleveland, former NFL tight end, as we kind of go through your career. And if you're listening now, about 1:30, 1:45, we'll talk Niners. Obviously, Asante, an NFL analyst. We'll talk Niners. We'll get the NFL picks in. But this is such a unique opportunity for us to have somebody in who played in the league and to have conversations about things that me and Chris don't have any context on, right? So I want to break down, or have you break down, what happens, your thought process, and what happens next Mr. Irrelevant gets called in the draft. So you said, okay, it's not happening. What is the very next thing that happens for you?
Well, you really hope that your name's going to get called. Mm-hmm. But fortunately, throughout the draft process, my agent was letting me know that which teams were interested. I had done private workouts for some teams, mm-hmm. like the Dolphins, the Cardinals, before the draft. So I knew there was some interest in other places. But once that final name's called, you talk to your agent and say, all right, here's a game plan. This team's calling. They're offering maybe a little bit of a signing bonus. This team really wants you, but they're offering no signing bonus. And I ended up originally, it was between the Patriots and the Niners. And I originally said, all right, I want to go to the Patriots. But the Patriots signed Asa Watson, who I played with in the NFLPA College Bowl. Great dude. Mm-hmm. Great tight end. But his brother, Ben Watson, had played for the Patriots. And the Patriots are very big on, like, if one brother played there, they will find a way to get the other brother. So they end up signing Asa instead. So I was like, all right, I'll go. I want to go to the Niners then.
Right.
So that's how that originally happened. And when you get there, you are low man on the totem pole. And you quickly realize how fast this can all be over. Because there are guys cycling in and out all the time. One of the other undrafted free agents that came in with me, he was dealing with a hernia issue at the same time. And for the first couple weeks, he didn't practice. And then all of a sudden, he was just gone.
Wow.
Yeah.
Never seen again?
Never seen again.
Wow. Yeah, and I'm sure there is a lot of, we'll get into some, I'm sure you have some rookie stories, right? I don't know if they got you with the, we just see the, oh, so-and-so made the rookies pay this $20,000 bill. Then it turns out they don't actually make him do it. All right, get into a break. When we get back, continuing to talk to Asante Cleveland, former NFL tight end, we are going to talk about the Niners, what they are going to be able to do this weekend against the Packers. We're also going to talk to Asante about his experience in the NFL, playing against some of the guys and coaches that are still in the NFL as well. All right, Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.
Live and local, it's Styles and Watkins. Watch the show on youtube.com/Sacktown Sports 1140.
Or listen on the Sacktown Sports app.
We are back. Asante Cleveland, former NFL tight end. Sacramento Hall of Fame. I put you in the Sacramento Hall of Fame. Styles and Watkins taking you up to 2 p.m. Asante, we were talking during the break. And as we move into your playing career, you have any funny stories? I know you said Jimmy G's your guy. You have any funny stories from any guys that you played with, any coaches, anything like that?
Funny stories.
Radio safe, of course.
Of course. I don't have anything crazy. It was when I was in New England, It was just such a eye-opening experience getting to be around some of the most talented people in their field, like obviously Tom Brady. I got to play with Gronk, and then Coach Belichick's the coach. But I thought what was just funny was how, like, down to earth and kind of goofy Tom could be.
Right. And we didn't really see that until the Bucks, until he went with the Bucks and he started posting more on socials. That's kind of when we started to see Tom, like, his personality. It felt like when he was in New England, people kind of said, like, push that stuff down.
A little bit. Well, all right, here is what's funny. Coach Belichick would get us prepared for every game. Mm-hmm. We would watch teams that we weren't even playing on a Monday and just see all of their mistakes that they would make throughout the game and just talk situationally, like, why we don't do this and all that. We would always have almost a script of what to say when a reporter would ask you something.
Wow.
That's crazy.
But the rule was rookies just shut the up. So, like, that's what you see in New England. Rookies never talk to the media. So I just thought that was hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah. Just, no, you're good. You're good. Yeah,
you haven't been indoctrinated.
Yeah,
you
know, exactly.
It's like the Patriot way is a very specific way. And like, how was that? I mean, like, was it truly, like they always say the Patriot way is its own specific way. Did you feel that? I mean, you weren't, you know, around a ton of different organizations or anything before that, but just did it feel different to be in that Patriots locker room?
Very different. Just based off the work ethic. I got traded to New England in my second year after a preseason game in San Francisco.
Wow.
My old tight end coach, who was then the defensive coordinator for the Niners, Eric Mangini, after I got told I was traded, I immediately went to his office and told him, and he was like, hey, it's different out there. You're going to work way harder. This is kind of cupcake, what we've been doing. Like, a lot of the stuff is going to be very different out there. So kind of like, get your mind right. And he was right. But in a way, it was almost like seeing football done right. Mm-hmm. We were still doing conditioning drills throughout the season where no team does that. Yeah. We were running hill sprints on every Tuesday. And then after those sprints, all of the young guys, the practice squad guys, you had another period of 10-play football that you had to work through to further develop your abilities, make sure you know the offense, and make sure you're like getting opportunities to make plays, which not every team does that, which seems like an obvious way to like develop your young talent, but not every team does that. So they do all of the little things very well. And then having one of the smartest football minds of all time around and the best quarterback of all time.
Yeah.
You see success.
Right.
Yeah, of course. And that's what they have a lot of. Asante Cleveland, former NFL tight end. Getting back to the Bay Area here, and if I say the two words, and you have been connected or are connected with two guys that are NFL coaches or will be as far as Jim Harbaugh is concerned, but Jerod Mayo and now Jim Harbaugh. If I say the words Jim Harbaugh to you, what comes to mind?
Goofy.
Really?
Goofy. But one of my favorite people. I originally had this idea of him before I got to the team that he was just always just yelling at people.
Yeah, maniac.
That he was just out of his mind. But being there, he's such a player's coach, but the only time he's really yelling is at the ref. He's never really yelling at players. So he is such a just a funny, down-to-earth guy. I remember him telling the story when, I guess, the Colts were letting him go. They sat him down and were like, hey, Jim, we're going to go in a new direction. And Jim was like, great, which way are we going? But no, he's a great coach, and he's proven time and time again that he knows how to build and develop a tough team.
Yeah, and I was going to ask, we've seen even college, like Nick Saban wasn't really able to find success in the NFL. Pete Carroll was someone who was able to find both. What do you think about Jim makes him able to succeed in both leagues or both organizations?
I think the fact that he was a quarterback for a long time, he knows how to build rapport with everybody on the team. He knows what it feels like to be that leader and that focal point in the locker room. And he's done a great job of letting people be themselves, and he's always had great coordinators and coaches around him. Right. So I think that's also added to his success. But we had probably the most talented team I've ever been on when I was with the Niners. But going from like seeing what works and what doesn't, the issue was there was so much the leadership was not on the same page, as opposed to like the GM, ownership, and Coach Harbaugh. They were not on the same page. And you see that is what eventually caused the erosion, because I was there for his last game. We had just beaten the Cardinals. We're getting to the locker room. We're celebrating a win. Mm-hmm. And Coach calls it up and is like, hey, I just want to let you guys know this is going to be my last game. And kind of like looks back to ownership and they're like, yep, yeah, it's going to be last game.
Wow.
And then so you see, like, that's where it was coming from, but great coach. But having ownership and the decision makers all on the same page plays a huge part of success.
Mm. Yeah, so you said you can kind of feel it. Were you surprised when he said that it was actually over, or did it feel like the team wasn't really surprised?
We had heard a little bit of rumblings that Michigan was interested in him, mm-hmm. so it wasn't a complete shock. But he was a great coach. It wasn't like we were having a horrible year. We went 8-8 that year. We definitely underachieved based off the amount of talent we had. But he was a great coach, and that was undeniable.
Yeah.
So it was more an ownership decision of, like, we think we know better.
Right.
And for a while, you proved that they didn't.
Mm-hmm. Rumor is that he's headed to another one of your former teams, the Chargers. You think he can – I mean, the saying goes, as Kyle – the not anymore Chargers fan. I don't know why you're raising your hand like that.
7-year recovering Charger fan.
Yeah, there you go. You think he's the guy, you know, the saying goes, Charger's going to Charger. Do you think he can change? Can he change that culture?
I think so. If one thing Coach Harbaugh knows how to do is he knows how to develop a tough team, a resilient team with a good culture. So I believe that if there is anybody fit for the task of unchargering the Chargers, I think it's Coach Harbaugh.
Not possible.
Yeah, we'll see.
And, I mean, you also played with, we mentioned Jerod Mayo with his last year in New England. I mean, what were your impressions of him in his playing time? And are you surprised to see him rise the ranks and become the coach? I know he's kind of had that placeholder for a couple years in New England. But, like, what were your thoughts on Jerod as a leader when he was a player and how he could potentially take this? I mean, the hardest thing you can do in sports is replace a legend.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that's exactly what he's going to try and do.
Mayo was a great leader when I got there. So I was with him his last season. So he wasn't in the prime of his career when he won Defensive Rookie of the Year. But he was a huge fixture in helping the other linebackers get right. So we had talented guys like Jamie Collins, Dante Hightower, Jonathan Freeney. And he was a big voice in making sure, like, everybody was on the same page. And a real just down-to-earth person. It's always fun when you're in a locker room where the defense and the offense all get along. They all work together. They try to help each other. And I think that he played a part in that. So I believe that now that he has this awesome opportunity to coach in New England, that he'll be able to bring that and provide that continuity and just overall leadership to that team.
How do you, like, I mean, you can't replicate what Belichick did. Like you said, I mean, his attention to detail is second to none. And I mean, he's a legend for those reasons, but how can he try and keep the Patriot way, but at the same time, put his own spin on it?
I think he'll be able to keep the core tenets of just the Patriot way is just focusing on your job.
Sure.
You don't need to do anything extra. You don't need to – you hear a lot of guys who they'll have a big fumble in the game. In the post-game interview, they'll say, oh, I was just trying to make a play. You don't need to. Like, all you need to do is catch the ball, get yards, go down. You don't need to do anything extra. And that's what the focus was in New England. Like, just do your job. So I think that he will continue – that mindset, but I think he'll also bring a fresh, new kind of perspective and energy to the team. Him being a former player, I think, will also immediately give that buy-in from the rest of the team. So I don't think he'll have to replicate Belichick, but I think he'll carry the most important parts from it.
Before we get to a break, you say the words Asante Cleveland on Sacramento airwaves and people want to be a part of the conversation. I don't know if you recall, a coach, Doug, is on the line, Asante, who wants to talk to you, a former assistant coach or coach of yours who wants to give his piece. What's up, Coach Doug? What you got?
Hey, this is fantastic to be able to talk with the young man again. He was a freshman at Christian Brothers, and I was coaching there. And I told him, I said, after what I found out that he was going to get drafted by the Niners, for college, that he was going to go to the university, and then he'd end up with the Niners, which was fantastic. I said, hey, they're going to say, Asante Cleveland, the U. And I told him that that's 10-plus years ago, 15 years ago. And he was a tremendous player for us on that team. We go 21-2. He was 6'5", and I had another tall guy that was 6'4", and we were pretty dominating, and just a wonderful young man at the time, and I've seen his mom and dad a few times, and I'm just very happy for you. I'm glad that you had a career and keep on to continue to do stuff with football. So I am still coaching, and that's been a while now, but thank you so much. I don't have any questions for you. I just know that you're probably very excited to be in the situation you are in your life, so thank you so much.
Coach, it's great to hear from you. Yeah, we had a great freshman team. Our freshman, the freshman basketball team at Christian Brothers.
And that's rare.
Yeah, we were really good. We won our league that year. We were like 21-2. Yeah,
you were on the freshman team?
Yeah.
We couldn't call you up?
But then I got called up for the playoffs. But then my sophomore year, I played varsity.
It should have been earlier than that.
Yeah, so I never did JV.
You've always been a big kid too, huh?
I was always tall. I never had a huge growth spurt. I always just kind of steadily grew.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Well, shout out Coach Doug. Thanks for calling. That was great stuff. Got to get to a break. When we get back, it's time for Asante Cleveland to put on his analyst hat. Not only is he picking the Niners game, we're also breaking down his thoughts on Brock Purdy and the other games in the NFL playoff slate this weekend. Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.
Sacramento has a new tag team in the midday. It's Styles and Watkins on Sacktown Sports.
Couple more minutes with you as we are joined by Asante Cleveland, former NFL tight end and Sacramento legend, getting calls, getting texts about it. Been great stuff. And we've also had some great conversations off air as well, which lets us know that this can't be the last time. We will have to have you back, Asante. But all right, it's time to do some NFL analysis here. And before we get into the picks, we got to ask you the hottest question in the NFL right now. What are your thoughts on Brock Purdy?
I think people have blown this whole game manager identity out of proportion. You want somebody who's going to manage the game very well, and he's done that. He's one of the most accurate throwers in the NFL. He makes great decisions. He makes quick decisions, mm-hmm. which is great. So he is an elite quarterback. He's played that standard, but because of where he's drafted, people can want to continue to focus on that.
You think that's a big part of it, the draft?
For sure. If he was a number one overall pick playing like this, he would be on every commercial right now.
Yeah.
Do you feel like game manager is just a negative term? Like when you hear it in general, would you?
I think people mean it in a negative way.
Yeah.
I think he does a great job of managing the game, but he also makes a lot of plays. He's a game changer as well. So I think people pick and choose when they want to see the great highlights he makes versus the few arid throws that he'll make.
Yeah.
I mean, because he has a couple throws this year that, I mean, you know, there's some Debo back shoulder throws. Yeah. I mean, there was two or three games in a row where the first drive in the second half, he's throwing deep balls that are right on the money. I think McCaffrey had one where he was wide open. Ayuk had one. Kittle had one. It just feels like it's overblown how much, I mean, Brock is out there making plays.
Yeah, he's making plays, and he is what they've needed.
Yeah, well, is it one of those things, as the kids say, if you know ball, you know that Brock is actually a baller? Because there have been, I mean, from Amy Trask, who's an NFL exec, there have been a lot of people that are supposed to know ball. And the Cam Newton thing to me, I thought what Amy Trask said, and I don't know if you saw it or not, how there are seven?
She said there's seven terrific quarterbacks and Brock Purdy.
Yes, there's seven terrific quarterbacks left in the NFL and Brock Purdy. And I thought that was way worse than what Cam Newton said when Cam was just kind of categorizing people. Can you be an elite game changer? Can you be this? Can you be that? Bottom line is, can you win games, right?
Yeah. Can you do what the offense needs you to do?
Right.
I think he executes in Shanahan's offense exactly how the game plan is set up. So he doesn't do more than he's required.
Yeah. All right, let's get to the game this weekend, and we'll get your Super Bowl pick as well. Niners, how you feeling about it? The line is 9.5. The Packers, you got a hot quarterback in Jordan Love. I'm not too worried about the Niners taking care of business. Do you think that the Niners should be on upset alert at all, or the Niners got this one?
I think they got this one. What they need to focus on is stopping the run. Hopefully, we have the real Sacramento legend back on the field, Eric Armstead. I think he'll play a big part in helping stop the run because they're going to try to pound the ball with Aaron Jones. And if they can contain the run and then just operate their offense how they have been all year, I think they'll win.
I don't know how much of Jordan Love you've seen this year, but I mean, what are your thoughts on, I mean, last week he looked incredible.
Yeah, I watched last week's game, and he was just as effortless as a thrower that you would ever see. So they hit on another quarterback again, apparently, which is great to see. I think what makes the Packers dangerous this week is that they're playing with house money. Sure. They were supposed to go home last week, and they're still here. So those teams are always dangerous.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the bottom line is, you know, a couple guys are out. Chiefs are a bit down, but you can never count out Patrick Mahomes. The NFC, when you're looking at, all right, the other quarterbacks, the other NFC quarterbacks, no disrespect to those guys, but between Baker and Jared Goff, Jordan Love, who's young, Brock Purdy, who's young, the Niners, this has got to be the year, right? I mean, you got to get there, but maybe not win, but you got to get there, right? I think
they have what it takes to get there. The way everything has fallen into place, Dallas got knocked up.
Yeah.
So I think they have what it takes to get to the Super Bowl for sure. And just going, as you laid out those quarterbacks, that lady said there's seven good quarterbacks.
That's right.
So she was
that's
putting
right.
Baker Mayfield over
that's right.
Brock Purdy.
Yes. That is correct.
Yes.
That is
clarify that.
You heard correct.
Yes.
Right. You that heard
is,
correct.
That is she knows ball.
Absolutely correct. Right.
Do you know ball?
And then that other Saturday game too, Ravens Texans. I mean, your thoughts on C.J. Stroud, his performance as a rookie, and you know, you talk about playing with house money. They weren't supposed to beat the Browns last week. I think there's a chance that they can give the Ravens a game. And then you got the Ravens, Lamar Jackson kind of stole that MVP from Brock, if you will. What are your thoughts on that matchup?
Once again, playing with house money, I think that the Houston Texans are just a perfect dream scenario of every NFL team, that they'll get a rookie head coach, rookie quarterback, and they'll be in the playoffs that year. They are in a great position to succeed. Now, Lamar Jackson is a different animal. I don't think they'll be able to do enough to contain him, but I think the next 2 or 3 years, the Houston Texans will be in the conference championship.
Wow.
That's great. I mean, yeah, and shout out D'Amico, who's, like you said, rookie year. I don't think anybody had any – forget playoffs. Like, I don't think people expected them to have an above 500 record.
No, they were a horrible franchise last year.
Yeah. You know, getting back to D'Amico, and we talked about Jerod Mayo, quick conversation before we do the rest of the picks about coaching. Do you feel like there's a new wave of coaches coming in? I don't know what happened. Oh, well, Mike McCarthy's staying, right? But these younger guys that are more outgoing and they're running up and down the sidelines, does it feel like there's – starting to become a bit of a shift in what the trend is for these coaches, or will there always be some names? There'll always be some names that'll get circulated around, but it feels like teams are starting to head towards, okay, well, if we're going defensive, this got rah-rah versus non-rah. Now Antonio Pierce gets the Raider job. Do you feel like there's a shift in what players are wanting out of a coach?
I don't know if it's necessarily a shift in what players want. I think players always wanted to be treated with respect by someone who knows what they're doing and has their best interests at heart, and that can put them in the best position to succeed. I think players will always want that. Mm. I think the trend changed once Sean McVay won a Super Bowl. Once a young coach was able to prove that he was capable, now you see the NFL going a little younger when they hire a coaching staff. So I think it's a good shift, but I think there will always be those legacy names that get circulated.
Yeah, fair enough, fair enough. All right, couple more minutes left here as we go throughout the rest of the NFL. And a hot name based on, you know, based on how you feel about him, he can be hot or cold. Chiefs at Bills. What you thinking there?
All right. I am pulling for the Bills on this one.
Okay.
I think that if there is ever a time for them to get it right and snap out of it and finally slay the dragon, which is the Kansas City Chiefs. Sorry, Kyle. I think this
they've gotten
is
about
the
as close as you can get without actually doing it.
For sure. And they're at home. The stars have aligned. They have to get it done. I think Josh Allen has played very well down this stretch. They just need to limit turnovers. The Chiefs have a great defense, but I think the Chiefs are as vulnerable as we're going to see them. Yeah. So I think this is the year for the Bills.
Last one, Bucks at Lions. Nobody thought the Lions were even going to beat the Rams. That was the dark horse team. They get that done. Baker Mayfield, two terrific quarterbacks, Jared Goff and Baker Mayfield. Who you got in Detroit?
I got Detroit. I really like what they've done. They've just, it's the best story in NFL, this team that has been shut out from playoffs for 32 years, mm-hmm. and now they're hosting back-to-back playoff games. It's a great story. I think the energy in there will be electric. I think Jared Goff will do exactly what it takes, minimize turnovers. They have a great offensive line, running game. They're a little vulnerable on defense, but I think they should beat the Bucs.
There you go. We got to get out of here. Thank you again to Asante Cleveland, former NFL tight end, Sacramento legend. Thank you so much. Thanks, Asante, you're going to be back on. Where can we see you again? KCRA soon?
I won't be on this weekend.
Okay.
But hopefully next weekend.
Well, cool. The Niners are going to win, so yeah. We will see you. We will catch you there next weekend. Thank you to our guy, Kyle Ledbetter, and to all the callers and texters in the Sack Chat for today. Everybody have a good weekend. Chris Watkins, Alan Siles, we will talk to you on Monday, hopefully celebrating a Niners W. Until then, secure the bag, light the beam.